Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the 162nd edition of the Feuerstein's Fire Internet Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com. Also listen to this program on MTRRadio.com. Ladies and gentlemen, chat room is open. Come on in and discuss some things amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer to the best of my ability as much as I can. And tonight it is World Cup qualifying preview show, as we're going to have on Mr. Christian Dyer from Big Apple Soccer, as well as Metro Newspapers in New York. And, of course, John Jagu will be coming on to discuss about Mexico's chances, if we can still call it chances, to talk about how Mexico could be faring after their two games. And, of course, as everyone knows, the U.S. will be in Costa Rica this Friday, and the Mexico will be hosting Honduras at the Azteca. And then, of course, both sides will meet together in Columbus, Ohio, this coming Tuesday, September the 10th. But before we get into that discussion, I want to bring in someone, a very good friend of mine, because this guy has been through a lot in Puerto Rico. And, of course, he is the brand new general manager of Bayamón FC, and that is my good friend Ignacio Rodriguez. Ignacio, thank you for calling. Thanks for being on the show. How the hell are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Actually, a quick little personal note. I will be in Columbus, Ohio, as it's always been a bucket list item of mine to watch USA-Mexico. So I will be taking off my employee hat, and I'm going to go jump around with the American Outlaws for a little bit and have a great time. It should be a fantastic game, and I think it might be kind of where the U.S. national team turns a corner a little bit. We can kind of gain reins of this rivalry, if you know what I mean.
Oh, absolutely. I do know what you're talking about. Ignacio, of course, a lot of questions are going to be asked now with your appointment with Bayamón FC. When did this come about, and why did you make this move?
Well, basically, after my relationship with the Puerto Rico Islanders kind of dissolves a little bit, I started exploring some options on the island. Bayamón FC, traditionally, especially at the local level, has had quite a resume, hosting several local championships, representing Puerto Rico in the CFU over the last couple of years. Granted, hasn't had the best performance in those tournaments. I have a great relationship with the president, Alberto Santiago, and, we started talking about the future of the club and kind of where it could go. And there's a lot of great things that Bayamón FC has that can kind of propel it to the next level. Obviously, the immediate goal was to finish first in the Puerto Rican League, qualify to CFU, hopefully get into a group stage for CONCACAF Champions League. We did finish first place in the Puerto Rico League with the game in hand, so we did qualify and make CFU. Obviously, the next step would be to put together a squad that can go compete over there and put Bayamón FC in the CONCACAF Champions League, which is pretty much what the club wants and kind of the first tangible goal that I want to be able to acquire.
Now, talk about the Puerto Rican League for a minute, because obviously some of us are not familiar with it, or for those that do are listening, how strong is the Puerto Rican League right now, or is it on its way being a strong league within the Caribbean section of CONCACAF?
Well, it's in an interesting place because with the operations ceasing with the Puerto Rico Islanders, a lot of ex-players have sprinkled with their way across the Puerto Rican League. The Puerto Rican League has also, I think, gotten much better in talent. With just kids playing more soccer on the island. The Puerto Rico under-20 team recently went to Pueblo. We just had another Puerto Rican player signed to the Academy of Sevilla. So the sport continues to grow on the island, and with the upcoming World Cup year, we expect it to grow even more. I mean, by MONFC by itself at an academy level has over 700 kids. So I think it's kind of a little bit curious that it's very much similar to the United States back in 1994 when it was and the A-League was trying to survive and they drew MLS, kind of the sport grows type of pride. So I think it has a very similar parallel. It's finally reached the grassroots, and some people even say that soccer plays on the island. Some better athletes are now focused on playing soccer. The coaching has gotten a lot better on the island, and I think, especially since the national team recently played Spain, I think there's a lot of interest from kids to not only play here on the island, but to play at the college level, and some of them even have the talent to play professionally.
Oh, that sounds pretty good. Very happy to hear that. Of course, you know, there's a lot of people here in the U.S. on the mainland that are originally from Puerto Rico or Puerto Rican descent that would love to see, obviously, one of these teams do well, especially Bayamón now that you're running it. But if I can ask this question, and, you know, if you're not sure, I understand, but what is the situation with the Puerto Rico Islanders? Do you think they will make a comeback in maybe in the NASL or some other pro league in the U.S. System? What have you heard of anything?
Well, I've heard a lot of different things, and I've heard a lot of different people giving their opinion on the situation. I think first, everybody has to grab, you know, and tip their hat to the administration of the Puerto Rico Islanders. I mean, it was a huge risk back in 2004 to put a soccer team here in Puerto Rico, convert a baseball stadium into a soccer team. Lifted a lot of great trophies, went very, very far in CONCACAF Champions League in 2010, as we all remember, against Cruz Azul. Perennial powerhouse in the NASL, and really a springboard to the national team. So before, you know, we get into the future of the Puerto Rico Islanders, I think it's important to kind of acknowledge the past and acknowledge the sacrifice that a lot of people in ownership, a lot of people in the front office, a lot of coaches, a lot of players that came through here kind of left their footprint on the island. So, I mean, it's very sad, the situation that they're in currently. What's going to happen, who knows? But I will say this, that ownership group is very, very aggressive. They have a lot of great connections, and I wouldn't be surprised if they came back, but I think right now it's a huge question mark, even if you were to ask them. But the brand recognition is something that's known not only across Puerto Rico, but across soccer circles across the world. And like I said, I know that's a very passionate, very influential ownership group that is capable of doing a lot of things. So, I mean, it right now, currently, from what I hear, it's a huge question mark. It's not a yes, it's not a no. I know that some people in that group are working behind the scenes to kind of see what can happen. But, you know, I think the most important thing is to kind of tip your hat and remember that without the Puerto Rico Islanders, soccer would be in a very, very different place right now on the island.
Absolutely there, Ignacio. And obviously, we always hope that everyone within this confederation of CONCACAF gets better, gets stronger. And that's the idea here, is that the hope is that, you know, Puerto Rico, they can do better. You know, we've seen it in the past while this CONCACAF Champions League has been, you know, coming in, replacing the old Champions Cup. But is there any former MLSers that are originally from Puerto Rico that used to play in MLS? I remember Chris Megalaudis is from the New York area. Is he playing in this Puerto Rican league right now, or no?
I think the most recognizable name you might hear is Noah Delgado, one-time captain of the Puerto Rico Islanders, currently playing for Sevilla, a team based out of San Juan, currently in second place. His teammate, Caleb Norcus, a lot of old soccer heads might remember him from his under-20 stints with the United States, also with his time with DC United and the Carolina Railhawks, and Jose Telesford. Also another person who spent a lot of time with the Puerto Rico Islanders, also on the Trinidad international team. So these guys have not only kind of taken roles as players and marquee players to take people to the park, but they've also taken kind of a mentorship role. A young Puerto Rican player by the name of Andres Cabrero was recently taken to Trinidad and Tobago to, you know, an opportunity to play in a better league through Jose Telesford. And a lot of these guys from the Puerto Rico Islanders that are from that golden generation now, you know, getting their kind of chops in the coaching ranks. Marco Velez, very much involved with the Federation, national team assistant coach for the senior team and the under-20 teams. Noah Delgado also participating with the under-17s. with the Puerto Rican Federation. So I think you see a little bit the Puerto Rico Islanders continuing to contribute, even though they're not active, but still making a lot of headway in what is Puerto Rican soccer.
Well, that's pretty awesome there. And, of course, we're all hoping everything will work well in Bayamón. Now, at the moment, the baseball stadium, or the reconfigured baseball stadium, which is now a soccer stadium, I can ask, are they still using where the Islanders used to play, or are they using a different
national
stadium?
The National League is currently playing there. It's also been activated for a couple of youth tournaments. At the international level, the under-17 girls team just recently hosted a CONCACAF qualifying stage. And let's be perfectly honest, the mayor is the number one fan. The mayor of Bayamón, speaking, is the number one fan of soccer that I've met, definitely in the political world, pumping millions of dollars into that stadium for the same game and beyond. And I've talked to a lot of people both in Puerto Rican soccer and North American soccer, and that venue is first class all the way. So you got to think Puerto Rico not only making strides on the pitch, players playing now in important leagues. Vito Ramos currently playing in El Salvador for Citro Metapan, who recently just played in CONCACAF Champions League. We got a couple of kids over in Finland. So making strides in infrastructure, making sure that they have the tools that they need so that the sport can continue to grow. And that's actually one of the things that really caught my eye in taking on this project with Bayamón FC is how incredible the infrastructure is, how new the facilities are, how amazing the facilities are, and how the community's kind of gone behind soccer now. And, there's nothing different from a youth soccer game in Bayamón, Puerto Rico, or Arecibo, Puerto Rico, than your AYSO leagues back home. I mean, the parents are very much into it. The kids are very competitive. Now there's travel teams spurring that want to go and kind of be involved a little bit on the, getting kids into Division I schools and whatnot. So I really think that, unfortunately, while the Islanders might have suspended their operations this year, you see a lot of positive things coming out of Puerto Rico soccer, not only with Bayamón FC and what they're doing in the first team, but at a grassroots level and how well they're competing at tournaments like Dallas Cup in Minnesota. It's a fantastic energy, a fantastic vibe around Puerto Rican soccer right now, and I'm just really, really honored to be a part of it.
Well, that's fantastic. I know you've been communications director for the original Miami FC. Of course, then they became the Fort Lauderdale Strikers and the great job, whoever you are doing communications with. And I know you're going to do a fantastic job as a general manager of Bayamón FC. Now, if you can tell us, because obviously I've never been the communications director, nor have I ever been the general manager of a professional sports club, regarding what sport it is, what are the differences of, instead of being the communications director, now becoming a general manager?
Basically, I just think the responsibilities go across the board as to where I might have been responsible for just the communications department. Now I kind of oversee all the departments. I'm very excited for this new challenge. I think I've had wonderful opportunities to learn under amazing people. I learned under some great people at Traffic, Enrique Sanz, Aaron Davidson, Tommy Knapp, Tim Robbie, Tom Mulroy, Evan Mitz, that they just kind of taught me about the soccer industry in general. And I think now it's my time to, or now it's my turn to kind of surround myself around the talented people, make sure that they're working in specific departments and making sure they have all the tools that they need to succeed. Because if there's anything that I've learned from all those people, it's kind of, let those people kind of work and let them kind of, let them take care of their jobs. And in the little time I've been at Bayamón FC, which is a little bit under a week, I have a great staff to work with, and I'm really excited to kind of teach them the things that I know and watch them apply it to this market. Because, in my opinion, I think the Puerto Rican market, the sky is the limit.
Yeah, I believe so too, and I do believe that with you behind the desk now, the big time desk, I think you'll do a great job with Bayamón FC. Ignacio, thank you very much for the time. I really do appreciate it. And, look, good luck with Bayamón FC. And at any time you want to come back on the show, you know where to go. Please do. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you, my friend, and good luck.
No problem, Danny. Thank you, and you're doing a tremendous job with the podcast. And if anybody sees me out in Columbus, you know, feel free to say hi, because I'm pretty sure it's going to be an electric atmosphere over there.
Oh, it definitely will be. Thanks a lot. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ignacio Rodriguez, everybody, the brand new general manager for Biomarkers. You know what? I apologize. Hopefully we have our audio issues fixed here. But now it's time for what we've all been wanting to discuss. The World Cup qualifiers in CONCACAF are right now, literally, just a few days away. Mexico will be hosting Honduras over at the Azteca. And joining me now, of course, John Jagu, who covers the Mexican national team and the Mexican Primera Division on Big Soccer. John, welcome back, my friend.
Hey, Daniel. How are you?
Doing very well, John. John, obviously, this is a very strange place for Mexico to be in, and I think you would agree with me that seeing them currently in third place, and not just in third place in the hexagonal, but I would have to say that this is somewhere, you know, strange and unusual circumstances, because they haven't done anything in this hexagonal. You know, they haven't lost, yet they haven't won at the Azteca. It's been three draws, but they haven't scored a goal, yet they haven't allowed a goal. How concerned are you that this could be probably the biggest match for the national team in God knows in how long?
In 4 years. No, I mean, obviously there's some concerns, but I think that, you know, there are a couple of things that I think, you know, for fans of Mexico that I think have been encouraging. The first thing is that, people have to understand that the Gold Cup, you know, regardless of what happened there, it really has no bearing on what's going to transpire in the upcoming qualifiers, because there will be zero players that played in the Gold Cup that'll be taking the field at the Azteca Friday night. So that's first. The second thing is the fact that that the coach Chepo de la Torre has he's kind of loosened up the strings a little bit as far as his very rigid formations. He in the second half of the Confederations Cup against Japan, for whatever reason, and maybe it was because either his players or his coaches finally said, "Listen, you guys, you have your stick and square pegs and round holes. I mean, you have players. You're not taking advantage of what they can do best. Put them in a formation where they can excel." They played the second half against Japan in a 4-3-3, looked terrific, scored two goals, could have scored a few more. Really just took it to the Japanese. And remember, this was the same Japanese team that gave Italy all kinds of fits. So, you know, Mexico won that game 2-1. Probably could have scored about two or three more goals with relative ease. And then, you know, of course, the Gold Cup happened. But, only one player from the Confed Cup team was on the Gold Cup. Raul Jimenez, who, is a backup striker at best on this squad. They played the Ivory Coast a few weeks ago up in your neck of the woods, up in the Meadowlands, again with that same 4-3-3 formation. They got a very necessary and good infusion of not just talent, but also experience and leadership in the midfield by bringing the recently naturalized citizen Christian Jimenez, who's been playing in Mexico for the past 10 years, you know, first for Pachuca and then for Cruz Azul. They brought Fernando Arce, who is with Tijuana, who, is a big reason why Tijuana's had the amount of success they've had in the relatively short period that they've been in the first division. You know, this is the same, Arce, who captained the midfield for the Tijuana side that gave the eventual Libertadores winners in Atlético Mineiro. They gave them all sorts of fits, both in Tijuana and in Brazil. They went to just one holding midfielder, because let's face it, in CONCACAF, especially at home, there's no reason why Mexico should ever play with two defensive midfielders, especially at these Azteca, when teams are going to be, and Honduras has already said we are playing for a tie. I mean, so it's obvious they're going to, you know, if just like in the three previous folks who played Mexico at the Azteca, they're not going to attack. They're going to sit back and see how long they can handle it. Mexico, I think, if they do start both Jimenez and Arce, and of course Giovanni Dos Santos will play on one side and probably Angel Reyna on the other in a 4-3-3, the question is going to be who's going to be their striker. You know, the fact that they're not going to be as conservative as they have been in the first few games at the Azteca. So because of that, I really do think that if they can get that goal in the first 15, 20, 25 minutes, then I fully expect I think Mexico is going to win the game regardless, which I haven't been able to say for a while because they just haven't been playing well, and I think that they've turned a corner. I think that the coach finally realized that he can, for whatever reason, he just didn't seem like he ever trusted his players, and like he would force them into situations where they just hadn't looked comfortable over the past year and a half. And I think that, you know, as they start getting more comfortable, I think that Mexico will go ahead and get the goals they need with Honduras. So whether it's Peralta who starts up front or whether it's Javier Hernandez, my guess is that it'll probably be Peralta only because he's been playing pretty well for the past few months for his club side, and he also got two goals in that game in the Meadowlands. So I think that he probably fits the scheme a little bit better than Hernandez does. You know, no slight on Hernandez. I mean, he's, you know, obviously has been a terrific striker for Mexico and will continue to do so. And, you know, he can certainly come in and play in a situation in which he's extremely comfortable, which is coming off the bench in the second half and attacking tired legs, which I'm sure he will want to do with relish, being that he hasn't really played all that much since that Japan game where he got the two goals. So, like I said, I think that Mexico is going to turn the corner. I think that the folks that thought that, including me, that thought that Mexico was in trouble, you know, there was always a good team there. They just, for whatever reason, just you know, teams slump, and I think the coach made just one bad decision after another, and I think things compounded on top of themselves. They didn't have a good Confederations Cup tournament. They've been extremely conservative at home, I don't think that can happen, and especially in World Cup qualifiers when you have a place like the Azteca where people, you know, aren't afraid to play at the Azteca anymore, which I think is complete hockey, because if people weren't afraid to play at the Azteca, then they wouldn't be, you know, playing all 11 guys behind the midfield stripe for, mm-hmm. you know, 85 of the 90 minutes, which is what the three teams that have played there previously have done. So mm-hmm. with that said, I think that, like I said, I think that Mexico should handle Honduras. It would be great if they can get that first goal in the first half. If they do so, then it wouldn't surprise me at all if they end up taking their frustrations out a little bit on the Hondurans. I mean, Honduras already said that's the one thing that they're actually afraid of is they think, you know, we'll take a 1-0 loss. We can't take a 4-0 loss or a 5-0 loss. And for whatever reason,
I think,
go ahead.
No, I was about to say, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, that's fool's gold right there. I mean, you'd rather take a 1-0 loss at the Azteca when, let's be honest, if you are the head coach of Honduras and the way that Mexico has been playing, you don't sit back. I think you try to attack, and I think you try to go into a hole that they can't dig themselves out of. But if you're going to be going, you know, men behind the ball and defend, and you just go for the point, then you're still keeping Mexico alive.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, because of that, and let's say, I mean, Honduras, you know, they've, you know, the Azteca has always been an extremely difficult place to play for everybody, but particularly for Honduras. And, I mean, even in the last cycle, you know, we have to remember that, you know, at this period, in the last cycle, Mexico was actually in fourth place, not third place, with the points that they had. And they ended up going to Costa Rica and getting a huge win down there, 3-0. And then they came back to the Azteca, where Honduras, if they were, I can't remember if they were in first or second place at the time, but they had a good team. I mean, this is what I've never understood about Honduras is that they have a good team and good players, but whenever they play, whether it's, you know, at the U.S. or whether it's versus or whether it's at Mexico, they just they turn into the Central American minnows, which they are not. I mean, they are a good team. They have good players. They have And I just don't understand that mentality. And, you know, and of course they did the same thing in the World Cup where they just, you know, were trying to hang on against teams like Chile and Switzerland. So I agree with you that it doesn't make any sense for Honduras to already think like that. And I mean, especially when Mexico has proven to be, you know, when they've been pretty vulnerable this time around. I mean, if I were the Honduras coach, I'd say, you know what, let's go after these guys the first 15, 20 minutes, see if we can steal one. And if we do, great. If not, then, you know, we'll take our chances as they come. But I mean, but to sit there and say, you know what, we're going to go ahead and play for the tie and we're not going to attack, we're not going to do anything. We're just, and then if Mexico does end up winning, we hope they don't blow us out. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, that's like, I mean, this isn't, you know, I'm getting ready to do a lot of college football games, and the first month of college football, I mean, it's like these gigantic schools are playing the Sisters of the Poor, and, you know,
yeah, right.
Honduras is not, you know, they are not the Sisters of the Poor. I mean, they are a good team, and but yet they don't ever want to seem to live up to those expectations when they're on the road, especially when they go to the tougher places in CONCACAF.
Absolutely. I don't know if, I mean, I guess I can ask you this question. I mean, you've seen a lot of qualifiers, whether it be, you know, back home in Texas on TV, or if you have been at the Azteca before. Has it been this bad in recent years?
Yeah, well, actually,
because
back in 98, Bora had, I can't remember if he had two ties or three ties at the Azteca. I mean, he qualified for the World Cup actually with a 0-0 tie against the U.S., but they ended up firing him after that, and then they brought in Manuel Laplante to be the coach, who ended up coaching the team in France, which, you know, most folks will tell you, at least folks that follow Mexico, that was, you know, easily Mexico's, you know, outside of the tournaments they had at home, you know, the best World Cup Mexico's ever had was the one that they had in France, where they had, you know, they were 10 minutes away from beating Germany in the round of 16. So it has happened before. And, you know, Bora was the... You know, I'm not going to say that his style was conservative this and that. Just Bora just had just has a different way of doing things. And you know, Bora's thing was, you know, let's just qualify. You know, it doesn't matter how it happens. Let's just. And I think that's where De La Torre's stance is that he's saying, you know what, you know, let's just qualify. That's why I think that I think we're going to see a completely different Mexico, not just in this game, but I think against the U.S. too. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not going to, you know, be silly enough to call it that Mexico is going to win against the U.S., but it, let me put it this way, it's not going to shock me if they do, and I don't think it should shock mm-hmm. anybody else either. So, if, you know, obviously this game here, though, is key, and if Mexico can manage to get 3 points here, and then if they can get a positive result, if they can get some points out of going to Columbus, which I think is entirely possible, then I think that's going to put them in a much better situation going into the last two games where, you know, conceivably they could, you know, with the win against Panama in October, could be enough to put them over the top to qualify for the World Cup. I mean, we mm-hmm. have to remember there's always one team in the top three in CONCACAF that has a terrible second half of the qualifying. It was Honduras in 2002 where they were just, you know, mopping the floor with everybody in the first half, and then the second half they just had a calamitous. That's not a word. They just had a precipitous fall, rather. And,
right.
You know, they lost. Didn't they lose at home to Trinidad? I mean, it was just terrible. They just completely fell apart. And the same thing happened to Costa Rica back in the last. They were in first place, you know, with four
right.
games to go, and they ended up sliding down the fourth. So, I'm not saying it's going to happen this time around, but. You know, it always seems to me that there's always teams that end up finishing strong in CONCACAF, and Mexico's done that several times since the hex has been in place. So I think that they're probably going to do it again this time. And the one thing I will say also about Mexico, I think that why a lot of folks are a little bit more at ease as far as where they think they are, is the fact that they have a lot of their good players are playing really well for their clubs right now. And hopefully... you know, it's one of the things I wrote about today in my article in Big Soccer is, you know, do you take the guys that have been your starters for the past 2 years, or do you go with the guys that have been playing really well right now? I think you got to go with the guys that are playing really well right now, because you have to get a you have to get the 3 points at the Azteca. You have no other option. And, you know, so hopefully that's what De La Torre is going to do with the players that he has at hand, which I fully expect them to do that. In fact, I've just been watching the reports, and, you know, they were asking even Javier Hernandez today because they had a mix on, and they said, you know, what are you going to do if it turns out that they start Uribe instead of you? And he said that's what they should do. He said, you know, no one here is, you know, including me, especially me, you know, thinks that they have their starting place guaranteed. If there's someone who's playing better than I am, then he absolutely deserves. You know, and that's just, I wish that every, you know, and all the teams that I follow, I wish guys were as had the level of professionalism that Javier Hernandez does. The guy is unbelievable. It almost makes me wonder, you know, maybe this should make him the team captain, just because the example that he sets for the rest of the team is outstanding, which is what you want your captain to do. You know, it's not often that you see strikers be team captains, but I think that with the way that he comports himself, he really is. He really is an unbelievable pro, and it's no wonder that people like Sir Alex and some other folks are just, you know, totally in love with the guy and with how he plays and how he handles himself professionally, what with the media and et cetera. So it's doesn't surprise me at all. And, you know, he'll be the first guy. And then the great thing about him is that he'll relish an opportunity to come off the bench and he'll get the goal. So I think that I do think Mexico is going to come out with a win against Honduras. I think that if they don't get a first half goal, then I think they'll probably just, you know, win 1-0, 2-0. But I think if they do get that first half goal, I think that like I told you earlier, I wouldn't surprise me at all if they take out some frustrations on Honduras. And it wouldn't surprise me at all either if Honduras folds like a tent after that either, because that's it's no disrespect against Honduras. I think that they're a great side. I've always had nothing but the highest respect for them. I've always been waiting for them to just wake up and turn it on and become the great team that I know that they can be. But when they can have when they've proven to have the and say the things that they have, as far as their mentality and how they approach games, then it just would not shock me at all if they end up, taking it on the teeth. So,
yep. Nope. I absolutely agree with you there. Last question, real quickly, of course.
Sure.
Since this hexagonal has been going on, has you know how the Mexican media are when things are not going right for the national team? You know, like you said before, they've sounded the alarms when they probably shouldn't have. Have they been making any comparisons with what Clinton's been doing with the USA and what De La Torre has done with Mexico in this hexagonal round, especially Confederations Cup and the Gold Cup?
Well, I'm sure. I mean, they see how the other countries are doing, and obviously Jurgen's has done real well. But to be honest with you, you know, in Mexico, talking about other teams doesn't sell papers. I mean, that's
yes.
So, I mean, if they make comparisons like that, they'll just make it in passing. They'll certainly not, you know, base their entire argument on, hey, well, the other teams are doing this. Because people just, honestly, they just don't care how the other teams are doing. That's the one thing that a lot of U.S. fans probably upsets them quite a bit, is that the Mexican fans and the Mexicans, they just don't care how the other teams in CONCACAF are doing. It just doesn't really affect them all that much. And again, it's no slide against the other teams, but it just especially for the media, it just doesn't it's not what sells the papers. It's not what gets the clicks on the website. It's not there's never going to be any rumors about, you know, this and that, you know, when it comes to whether or not Honduran is coming or whatever. It's not good business to, if they get a chance to blast Mexico, then they're going to, you know, come at Mexico with both barrels, you know, and reloading as fast as they can, because that's what sells.
All right.
So, there's your
answer. There we go. Well, thank you very much, John. And listen,
sure.
Hope to talk to you soon. And enjoy the rest of college football and the start of the NFL season. And, of course, more Mexican soccer.
Sure, no problem.
These two matches.
Daniel, and don't worry about your Jets this year. They'll clean house again starting next year.
I know. Rex is done. It's over. Doesn't matter. All right. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon, John.
Sure.
That's John Jagu from Big Soccer. He covers the Mexican national team and, of course, the clubs in the Mexican Primera Division on Big Soccer. Go ahead and look him up whenever you can. Joining me next, of course, was not able to come on live. We were able to tape it this afternoon. Christian Dyer, who writes on Big Apple Soccer as well as Metro newspaper in New York City. We talked about the USA and their chances here and what's been going on. Apple Soccer.
Daniel Feuerstein here, along with a very talented writer that covers everything soccer in the New York City area as well as covers the national team on Big Apple Soccer. It is Christian Dyer. Christian, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, yeah, it's always a pleasure being on your show.
Thank you very much. Now, let's go straight into these two qualifiers. Of course, we all know the U.S. is in the top of the hexagonal table, 13 points right now, big road game in Costa Rica, and then they come back to Columbus to face Mexico again. I mean, it's unbelievable what Jurgen Klinsmann has done with this team, and at the same time, what he's done with the Gold Cup roster that he's had and winning the Confederational Championship. What do you think Klinsmann has done that's made this our players so solid?
Well, I think really it was more the players who have made Klinsmann solid rather than Klinsmann making the players solid, and I'll explain. When he came in a couple of years ago, he kind of talked boldly and grandly about changing the way the U.S. played soccer. And then he went out, ran out this 4-3-3 alignment, tried to play very heavy attacking style, went with a very Latin influence, a lot of players based in Mexico, a lot of Mexican-American-based players who maybe were a little heavy on savvy and technique, but weren't quite up to par on the international level. And I think now Clinton's kind of had to mesh his style. He realizes that the United States isn't necessarily going to be this tiki-taka sort of side that's going to play a Barcelona free-flowing game. Their strength is still being solid defensively, hitting on the counterattack, doing well on set pieces, and now blending in a little bit more of the possession style. So if you ask me, what has Klinsmann done to be so effective? I think he's had to adjust and learn and grow as a head coach. And some of the people I've been able to speak with within the Federation have said that Klinsmann's had to tone down some of his grandeur for at least this cycle, realizing the players he has, the style's going to be a little bit more like a Bob Bradley kind of style, if you will, when you play up against some of these bigger nations, when you're on the road. You do have to play a counter-attacking style. Just because you're the biggest power in CONCACAF right now doesn't mean that on the road you're not going to face adversities you don't face anywhere else in the world. So I have to give Klinsmann a lot of credit. It's been more about his growth and his development as a head coach and perhaps a little bit more of a realistic outlook than anything that I say is the reason why they're on top of the hex but also won the Gold Cup with the B team.
Absolutely. And, of course, the recent scare that we had at the moment, Jozy Altidore over at Sunderland, he had a bit of an injury during training, wasn't out there for the match on Saturday, but apparently he is in camp and scans are negative. It sounds like he might be available, I'm assuming off the bench, but talking about Altidore, how he has grown as a national team player and at the same time as just a player all around, because the big hat trick against Bosnia-Herzegovina was absolutely unreal.
Well, certainly, you're looking at a player in Altidore who is capitalizing on his opportunities now. He's playing instinctively. He's playing with a real clinical sort of mindset. I think he realizes that this isn't necessarily, and the level that he's playing at now, the international level, you only get a handful of chances in a game. And if you want to score a goal, you need to capitalize on those chances. I think what's most impressive about Altidore is he's playing quick soccer. I think that's part of his mental and his emotional development in Holland with the style that they play. I know it's not the most defensive of all leagues there, but certainly a free-flowing, fast-paced, athletic sort of game. And I think that bodes well for the national team because still this U.S. national team, when they're on that counterattack especially, is a free-flowing, fast-paced sort of team. You saw the goals that he scored in Bosnia, the goals that he scored in Germany, oftentimes with very quick build-ups off counterattacks, an overlapping pass, one touch into Altidore in the 18, he shoots and he scores. So I think more than anything, it's not necessarily anything technique-wise that Jozy Altidore is doing. He's just being faster and he's being more efficient, and that's a good sign because if he can be an efficient goal scorer for the U.S., this whole team, the dynamic of the team changes.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, we saw the glimpses of Aron Johansson. Of course, everyone's calling him Kevin Bacon. I guess he looks a little bit like Kevin Bacon. But even though he didn't score in the friendly, my God, to see him on this qualifying roster for both Costa Rica and Mexico, I understand why the Icelandic Federation was very upset he switched up. But still, though, their loss is our gain, and it looks very solid right now.
Well, Johansson is a good player, and what I like about him in particular playing with Altidore is that he could potentially be a good foil for Altidore up top. You're talking about someone who's very comfortable with the ball at his feet, likes to take defenders on one-on-one, isn't afraid to send a pass across the face of goal, where a player like Josie, the physical specimen that he is, can certainly knock that into the back of the net. I think it ends up being a very good combination because Johansson can drop back, he can play up top, he drifts from side to side, and that really can open up those passing lanes and those channels for Josie to get the ball. And I think you put a Landon Donovan on the field with a Johansson, with an Altidore, Clint Dempsey, who certainly has that ability as well. You're starting to look at a little bit of a different dynamic here, and I think we're starting to see glimpses of Johansson, what we saw at least in the Bosnia game. He can be a world-class caliber player. Ironic that he's coming from Iceland, not exactly known for producing high-level quality soccer players, but he certainly has that kind of skill set if he continues to develop to be a top-10 level striker in the world. So certainly that's an exciting development, but I think the chances that he's going to be able to mesh with Altidore and work well up top, they bring two different styles that can blend well together. So to me, Dan, that's the most exciting part.
Big games, of course. USA will be down at the National Stadium for Costa Rica. Of course, the Costa Rican Federation not happy about the snow game over at Dick's Sporting Goods Park over in Colorado. They wanted to bring it back over to the Dragon's Den. Apparently, that hasn't happened. I think there's some sort of construction going on over there, a refurbishment project. So it will be at the National Stadium. Your gut feeling, how you feel this match is going to end up for the U.S. Do they qualify after September for Brazil?
Well, it's going to be a challenge. I think Costa Rica is going to be the more difficult out of the two games for the U.S. at this juncture. You're going up against a Costa Rica team that feels very slighted from the situation, from how everything played out this past spring in Denver, which you alluded to already. And certainly that is a difficult environment. Now, it's not as difficult as the Saprissa Stadium, where they used to play the qualifiers, where the crowd was on top of you, where you had that awful turf. Now you've got a track around the field, and while it's still a difficult place to play in a difficult environment, it won't be as tough of a place as usual, except for the fact this Costa Rica team wants to go out there and prove itself after what I thought was a slight a few months ago in Denver. So to me, that's going to be a difficult game. If I'm Jürgen Klinsmann and I walk out of there with 1 point, I'm very happy. I think this Mexico team right now is really struggling. They're going through a free fall. They're lacking confidence. And quite frankly, I think going into Columbus Crew Stadium is really going to be a challenge for them. They're going to go in there knowing that the past few times that they've played there, the results have not gone their way. You would like to think the U.S. can win both of these games. I'm not sure. I think Mexico's going to be playing very desperate soccer. I think Costa Rica's out to prove something. But I do think 4 points is there for the taking. And 4 points, I don't know if that's enough for them to qualify at the end of this month. But certainly it puts them in a prime position with some very winnable games from here on out.
And finally, of course, Landon Donovan, and there have been some pundits out there that are saying, you know, now that Landon Donovan is back with the team, maybe he'll start off the bench, not saying like he's going to be suspended by Klinsmann or anything, but maybe because you have more weapons than probably you've never seen before with Graham Zuzi, of course, in the midfield, Clint Dempsey will be in the midfield. Does Landon Donovan start on the bench against Costa Rica, and then maybe he'll start against Mexico and Columbus?
That would certainly be very interesting. I think that could be a real advantage for the U.S. If they can go into the 60th or 70th minute in Costa Rica in a tie, and you bring Landon Donovan off the bench, he brings a tremendous work rate. He certainly tracks back very well. And at the international level especially, he's always been one of the first players back to defend. but he still has just enough speed and just enough creativity where I think he can add something. And that might be Landry Donovan's role after this World Cup if he wants to continue to be a part of the U.S. and to be a 25, 30-minute guy who can slot in centrally in the midfield, play in the wing, play up top, use experience, use that skill set, and use that ability. So I think the Costa Rica game might be a foreshadowing of Donovan's future role with the national team after the World Cup. And that will be an exciting thing, because to have a Landon Donovan coming off the bench with his versatility is a good thing. But I think you have to have him on the field in the starting 11, Dan, for Mexico. I mean, here's a guy who always seems to be a real pain for El Tri. You know, always puts the dagger in. Certainly, we think back 2002, the performance he had in the World Cup against Mexico to book the U.S. to the quarterfinals. And all the time, it seems like Landon Donovan is scoring goals, setting up goals against Mexico. So you want to have him in the starting 11 for that game. But certainly, I would have no problems with him starting off the bench and then keeping him fresh for that game against Mexico.
Absolutely. That's Christian Dyer from Big Apple Soccer. Christian, thanks for the time, and I'll talk to you next time over at Red Bull Arena.
Sounds good, Dan. Looking forward to seeing you.
That's Christian Dyer once again from Big Apple Soccer, as he gives you his opinion about the USA's chances of hopefully qualifying, especially with Klinsmann's done and everything's going on. I apologize for the audio problems that we're having here on the show, and hopefully they'll be fixed up and as we continue on. North American Soccer League action now, and some interesting matches that happened over the weekend here as we recap everything here. How about that? A one-goal victory for the Fort Lauderdale Strikers over at Lockhart Stadium. It was King in the 52nd minute from Guerrero, and that's the only goal of the match here. Is Fort not looking good to start this NASL fall season, and they get a good 1-0 victory at home. Once again, Fort Lauderdale 1, Carolina 0. Interesting things going on here in the NASL. And as we continue to discuss about what's been going on, that was, of course, on Friday, August the 30th. Saturday, August the 31st, we have the Rowdies and the Silverbacks. It was a 1-1 draw over at Silverbacks Park. It was an early goal by Pedro Mendez in the fourth minute from Menjivar, but Hirsch, of that, a couple of bookings here and there, nothing to worry about when it comes to being people sent off. So the final score, once again, Atlanta 1, Tampa Bay 1 over at Silverbacks Park in Atlanta, Georgia. Minnesota United with a big road win down in Toyota Field at San Antonio, and that would end Tim Hankinson's job over with the Scorpions. Two bad starts, a bad fall season start, as Tim Hankinson has been relieved of his duties. It looked like it was going to be a good start here for San Antonio. Ramirez gets the first goal of the match in the to equalize, and then in the second half, in the 50th minute, he puts Minnesota ahead to make it 2-1. Zahorski equalizes in the 78th minute. Maybe there could be some saving here, but no. Tobin, within the 90th minute, maybe around second half stoppage time, puts Minnesota ahead on the road. They steal 3 points over in Toyota Field, down in San Antonio, Texas. The final, once again, San Antonio 2, Minnesota United 3. Tim Hankinson's coaching era down in San Antonio. FC Edmonton hosting the New York Cosmos Stadium, and it was a pretty good game so far. Chris Nurse put Edmonton ahead 1-0 in the 68th minute, but Marco Senna in the 79th minute equalized for the Cosmos, and that match ended 1-1. So looked like to be a clean game, no problems here at all. But once again, Giovanni Savarese doing a pretty good job with the Cosmos. It looks like FC Edmonton is doing all right. Final score once again. FC Edmonton 1, the New York Cosmos 1. And with after all that, let's go to the standings right now. And my goodness, look at this. tight race again, points on the line, and surprises all around. Carolina Railhawks race in the NASL fall standings. They have played, everyone's played five matches. Carolina has 10 points, three wins, a draw and a loss, with a plus four differential. For the Strikers, they have two, an even differential, but they have 9 points. In third place, the New York Cosmos with two wins, two draws and a loss, with a minus one differential. Third place with 8 points. Tampa Bay Rowdies and Minnesota United are tied for fourth with 7 points each. Tampa Bay with a win and four draws. They have not lost the game yet, so they are undefeated. Minnesota United, they have won two. They have drawn one. They've lost two. Plus one on the differential to put them in fifth place. Tampa Bay's got plus three on the differential. That's why they're in fourth. And in tied for sixth, the spring season champions, Atlanta Silverbacks, they've a win, three draws, and a loss. Same thing with FC Edmonton, a win, three draws, and a loss. They both have scored four, both have allowed four, and both have the even differential. So at the moment, goal differential, the first tiebreaker. And that, of course, is even. Total goals, that's even. Head-to-head record, we haven't seen that yet. So at the moment, we'll say right now Atlanta is up on FC Edmonton. Dead last, San Antonio. They've played five. They've lost all five. They've scored eight. They've allowed 15. Minus seven on the differential. They have no points. Obviously, it's the second season for San Antonio. No one expected them to be having this bad of a fall season, and unfortunately for Tim Hankinson, he paid for it by being sacked. So, right there and then, you just have to say that it's been very interesting to see what's been going on. And obviously, Tim Hankinson, we wish him the best of luck. Hopefully he'll... And as we continue on here, with the schedule, getting ready for these next games on Saturday. All games will be on Saturday. All four games will be on Saturday. The New York Cosmos will be hosting the spring season champion Atlanta Silverbacks at James M. Short Stadium in Hofstra University. Right at 7 p.m. Eastern. You could probably catch that game locally here where I am in New York on SNY. On Saturday, September the 7th as well, Minnesota United will be hosting FC Edmonton at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central at the National Soccer Stadium, the National Sports Center Stadium, I should say, over in Blaine, Minnesota. At 7:30 p.m. Eastern, Tampa Bay Rowdies will be hosting the Carolina Railhawks over at Al Lang Stadium. That's on at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. And finally, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers will be hosting those last-placed fall season side San Antonio Scorpions over at Lockhart Stadium, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time here on NASL.com. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to catch any games live, whether you are at home or away, NASL on Ustream, go to NASL.com, click on the multimedia tab, watch those games on through their Ustream channel as well on Ustream.com. And you can catch everything and anything, NASL. It's going to be fun. It's going to be great. Let's go to Marco Senna, who's been named NASL Player of the Week. Congratulations to the former Spanish international. Your NASL team of Week 5, of course, for the league. Here it is right now as we get ready. The goalkeeper from the Tampa Bay Rowdies, Diego Restrepo. Defenders for Team of the Week, Ivan Guerrero from Fort Lauderdale, along with Antonjevic, and then Minnesota United's Connor Tobin. Midfielders, Walter Ramirez from San Antonio, from FC Edmonton, Marco Senna from the Cosmos, Richard Menjivar from the Atlanta Silverbacks, the forwards in this NASL Team of the Week for Week 5, Darnell King from Fort Lauderdale, Tomas Zahorski from San Antonio, and finally, Pedro Mendez from Atlanta. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, your NASL Team of the Week, Week 5 of the fall season. And, of course, don't forget to catch anything interesting going on with the NASL. Go to NASL.com. Go ahead and take a look and see what's going on here. If you want to replay some of the games that have already been passed, head on there and you can see the replays through their multimedia section. Just click the multimedia tab and go straight on over. NASL.com. Anything on to watch their videos, of course, live matches, Ustream.com. And it's just one of those things that you just have to say. It's going to be good. It's going to be great. And you know what, everyone? It's going to be awesome. I know I can't wait for it. I know it's going to be great. And as we keep on going here, of course, World Cup qualifying is underway on Friday. Just want to give everyone some information. This Friday, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, my pregame show for USA at Costa Rica. Of course, the match will be on the beIN Sports channel. And, of course, it's Rosh Hashanah. I will not be traveling to New York City at the Football Factory. I will be over at the Hooters in Wayne, New Jersey on Route 23 to broadcast the show because it's closing up the new year for the Jewish New Year on the Jewish calendar. Will not be able to travel all the way to New York. It'd be too late because usually I like to get there. I like to get to my location early since I do not get beIN Sport right now. I like to get to my location early, and I won't be able to do that. Please listen to my pregame show at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 Pacific, and then postgame will be on at midnight on Saturday, September the 7th, 9 o'clock Eastern Pacific. So please listen to my postgame show. Carter Kirschneier will be joining me, as well as my good friend Chris Webb, who will be joining us on postgame. So Carter Kirschneier and I for pregame show at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. And then again, postgame, my son Chris Webb, postgame midnight Eastern, 9:30 p.m. Pacific, as we talk about everything going on with the United States and World Cup. It's coming down to the wire. We have four matches remaining. We got these two in this month in September, and then the next two, the final two, will be in October. And, of course, playoffs will be happening. We'll see who goes, who will advance automatically, who will go to the playoff and try and get those remaining spots. Don't forget, everyone, as we talk about World Cup qualifying really quickly, here is the schedule once again. Mexico will be hosting Honduras at the Azteca. Panama will be hosting Jamaica. Costa Rica, once again, hosting the U.S. That's on Friday, September the 6th. Everyone knows what's happening on Tuesday, September the 10th. Mexico versus the United States over at Columbus Crew Stadium. Panama hosting Honduras. Jamaica hosting Costa Rica. Those are the September matches, the course that USA-Mexico will be on Tuesday, September the 10th. And a lot of interesting matches outside of CONCACAF, as always. We know the marathon, it is the South American qualifiers going on here on Friday, September the 6th, of course. Paraguay hosting Bolivia, Chile hosting Venezuela, Peru hosting Uruguay, Colombia hosting Ecuador. Argentina will get the break for that round on Friday the 6th. But on Tuesday the 10th, of course, Argentina is back in there. Bolivia taking on Ecuador. Paraguay taking on Argentina. Venezuela taking on Peru. And taking on Colombia. And, you know, the break for that, for those games, the break is for Chile on Tuesday, September the 10th. And as we look at UEFA, Belgium is in first place right now with 19 points. Croatia is in second with 16 points. Of course, Wales and Macedonia have not played seven games yet. They're going to do so coming up here, their seventh game. some of these games in hand. But, you know, it looks like to me Belgium is going to win Group A in Europe. Italy has a 14 points in Group B. Bulgaria is in second group with 10. And Czech Republic right now is in third with 9. So the playoff position could be interesting. Germany, of course, dominating 16 points in Group C. The Netherlands dominating Group D, as they already have 18 points. Hungary in second place with 11 in Group D. Romania in third with 10 in Group D. With the rest of what's going on, of course, we'll go back to Group C, three-way tie for 11 for the playoff positioning, Austria, Sweden, and the Ireland Republic. But, of course, Austria has a plus 10 on the differential, so still plenty of games remaining. UEFA in Group B, Switzerland leading with 14 points in Group B. Albania in the playoff positioning with 10 in second. Iceland in third with 9. Norway with 4th with 8. Group F, Portugal. Very interesting stuff here. Very interesting. As we all knew, saw Russia made up the match against Northern Ireland in Northern Ireland due to the snow date. And, of course, Northern Ireland with a 1-0 win over Russia. Israel. We'll see what happens with Israel if they can try to leapfrog Russia. Portugal leading Group F at the moment with 14. Bosnia-Herzegovina, 15 points. We'll see what happens. Montenegro in first place in Group H with 17. England in second place with 12. But it could happen if they make it through the playoff round. We'll see what happens. Spain leading by a point on France. Spain with 11. France with 10. In Group I or Group 9, we'll see what happens. And going on, we already know who's already qualified through Asia, Japan, South Korea, Australia, Iran. It's all about that fifth-place finish. And then going into the playoff against the fifth-place CONMEBOL side, South American side. So we'll see what happens there. But plenty of stuff going on, plenty of things happening. And it's going to be exciting. Let's move on now. Red Bull Hour rivalry. DC United goes down losing to the Red Bulls by a final of 2-1. Very, very fun things to see. But, and unfortunately, it's a big but. And we're going to start off with what happened with Tim Cahill. The defender for DC, I forgot who it was, very, very dangerous tackle on Tim Cahill in the DC area. For some reason, the referee played advantage because, yes, the Red Bulls still had the ball. The tackle happened in the area. And even though it really looked bad. And to see the referee not call for the penalty, even though we know what happened afterwards, let's be honest, though, that should have been punishable by a red card. That was a reckless challenge against Tim Cahill. A very, very reckless challenge by Tim Cahill. Against Tim Cahill. My fault, wrong analogy. Very, very reckless challenge against Tim Cahill. No penalty on the call. 4 weeks with torn ligaments in his ankle, that same ankle. He was the red card did not come out on Jordani Alvarez, who gave the PCL tear to Tim Cahill. And now look what happened to Tim Cahill again. He will be lost for the rest of this month in September. Hopefully he'll be ready to go in October. You know what that also means? It means he's not going to be able to go to friendly match for Australia. And obviously, we were going to lose him anyway in Houston. But the point is, now you've lost him for a month. You've lost him for the road match in Houston, for the home match against Toronto, the home match against FC Dallas. You've lost him for this entire month of September. And to be fair here, ladies and gentlemen, to be fair here, has been asked of him, and unfortunately now he'll be missed once again for a certain part of this season. I don't know. What do the Red Bulls need to do? What do the Red Bulls need to do to get a penalty? I mean, it's been absolutely asinine to see that happen once again to Tim Cahill. If you go to MLSsoccer.com and you take a look at the highlights, he's in the middle of the field. He's preparing to accept the ball, and then he gets studs tackled right into his ankle. It was absolutely horrible. It was disgusting. And even though Lloyd Sam made a nice chip, and even though Lloyd Sam, you know, great chip shot, as he says, and we'll play the audio for you, hopefully it'll be working. But once again, ladies and gentlemen, just an absolutely despicable play by DC United's defender. Just an absolutely horrible display by the DC United defender. As I'm trying to get his name and number here. I thought I did have it, but I guess not. I guess I'm going to have to look it up online then. Well, that's weird. Let me see here. I think I have it here. Yep, here it is. Dejan Jakovic. A horrible tackle on Tim Cahill. Studs into the ankle. Withering in pain. And there's no penalty, there's no red card, there's nothing. It's just absolutely disgusting what happened. And now he's out 3 to 4 weeks with torn ligaments in his right ankle. It's unbelievable. I don't know what to say. Yet, Ibrahim Sagaya, yeah, he was clumsy on the challenge against Dwayne De Rosario. But how is that a red card? It's a penalty, no questions asked. Is it a red card? That is not a red card, ladies and gentlemen. I would have given him at least a yellow for that. But the truth of the matter is this. Inconsistent officiating. If I had an official, a main referee, in the middle of the field, from another league in another country, that's a red card. That's a red card on Dejan Jakovic. But there's no red card. And that was a lot worse than the bumbling by Ibrahim Sagaya. Not questioning if it's a penalty or not, because it was a penalty. The color of the card I question, because there was nothing that happened. And that's what gets me infuriated. That's what gets me upset when I'm seeing the Red Bulls down to 10 men when that's barely a red cardable offense. I don't know why the referee saw it. Juan Guzman saw that as a red card, because the Red Bull should never have been down to 10 men. Booking? Okay. Give a booking. Red card and out? That's where I get upset, and that's where I get angry, because you have a referee who changes things up in the middle of the game as he sees fit for no reason. You go by the laws of the game. You go by what it should have been before. But the problem is, where's the red card on Dejan Jakovic, and where was the yellow card for Ibrahim Sagaya? And that's what I'm talking about. Pro needs to work a lot harder on informing these referees that you need to call, not just for a penalty, but that's when you have to give a red card. Now, I understand Lloyd Sam scored, and that's... But the point is that, you know, let's be honest, I don't want to give the goal, I don't want to take the goal away from Lloyd Sam. I really don't want to. But the point is simple, is that that should have been a penalty for the Red Bulls. That should have been sending off on Jakovic, and they should have been the team down to 10 men. That's the truth. That is the truth. And it's unfortunate for Tim Cahill. He'll be missing at least 3 to 4 games with this torn ligament injury. And it's just a shame. But still, though, let's talk about that goal by Lloyd Sam. Lloyd Sam, unbelievable how he was able to just cross that shot. And it's just one of those things where you just got to say that it was a hell of a shot. It was just a hell of a shot. And for Lloyd Sam, you feel good about him because he was used in a starting role. The game against Philadelphia, or shall I say the game at Philadelphia around the end of June where he got red carded, that was not a red card. And I'll still say it's not a red card. And I still believe it's not a red card because he tried to stop himself. And that was really an unfairness on Mike Petke to not put Sam back in and into a starting 11 role. And now you see Lloyd Sam being used on the right side, Alexander back in his central midfield role. And when Tim Cahill comes back from the injury, I think it's time to have Alexander stay in the middle of the midfield, or let's be honest, let's yank him, put Tim Cahill back in the middle, or you can have Cahill pairing up with Henry up top, maybe bring in Espíndola off the bench, or you still have Henry and Espíndola up top. You know, the thing is going to, I think it's going to work. Espíndola, I think he needed a mental break. Good for him, and then he'll be used for the next game. But once again, Lloyd Sam, the terror down the right side, and he had a great game. Definitely not enough crosses from him, or at least not enough opportunities to allow him to move the ball up on the right side of the field. But still, though, Lloyd Sam had a great match. Happy for him, and he should remain on the right side, remain a starter to go forward. Bradley Wright Phillips, not a bad job. I thought he did well. He tried to get into the game, and he also felt, whenever he felt like he had to score a goal, he took his shots. Unfortunately, they were blocked, but still, though, he took his shots. You cannot ask for anything better than that. He took his shots, and he looked strong. He looked good out there, and obviously, maybe it's time for him to be used a little bit more. Maybe you can use him in the midfield. Steele looked good. Dax looked good. People are starting to look good. The defense, a little suspect in this game. It's got to be better. Olave should be ready to go against Houston when he'll be matched up in the middle with Marcus Holgorsen. I think David Carney's done okay. Needs to do a little bit better, obviously. Fitness is not completely there yet, but he was decent. He'll get better, obviously. He will get better. And I can't wait to see it happen because I think David Carney is going to be – he's a good fit here right now for Brandon Barklage. Hopefully he'll be okay. It looks like he won't be available for Houston. Kosuke Kimura will be in Houston, probably as a starting right back for the Red Bulls. But they get off the three-game winless streak. They get off the schneid, and they move forward. They get a win against their big rival, DC United. And, of course, DC, dead last in the league. That little skirmish between Ben Olsen, Mike Petke, oh, that was gorgeous. That was beautiful. It was probably something we haven't seen in a good while. Hans Backe, he never did that with Ben Olsen. Mike Petke, oh, he'll do it with Ben Olsen. Oh, the good old days, and you'll hear that. You'll definitely hear that. Great things come to those who wait, and boy, it was absolutely brilliant. I loved it. It was awesome. And now the situation between Mike Petke and Thierry Henry. Listen, I understand Mike's a rookie head coach, and I understand Mike Petke has not played in any major leagues. Maybe he had an opportunity that he probably did want to take, probably play in the Bundesliga, I think it was, but he decided not to take it. But, you know, he's played in Major League Soccer. He knows Major League Soccer. Thierry Henry basically, you know, had Hans Bakke as a coach, chose not to mess around. But the point is that this is not Hans Bakke's team anymore. Maybe it could have been handled a little bit differently, then I would say, okay, you got me there. Maybe Mike should have walked up to Henry and said, listen, I'm not going to say this out loud in front of the guys, in front of the media here today, but I'm asking you to please fix it up. I'm asking you to please, you know, don't do this. Please train hard and everything. But, no, it didn't happen like that. Because apparently, Mike Petke did it his way. Mike Petke is showing it is going to be done his way. Did they hammered it out afterwards? They sat down with each other? They made up. That's what happened. And, you know, if some of you that are going to be on Thierry Henry's side of things and you don't believe it, that's fine. Believe Henry, believe. And Petke did the right thing. Some of you believe that. Apparently, listening to on the DVR, because I always DVR the games, on NBC Sports Network, Robbie Musto at halftime said what Mike Petke did was the right thing. Mike Petke, who is the manager, the head coach, had the right to bench Thierry Henry for the first half. He had every right to do what he was supposed to do as a head coach. Watching Fox Soccer Daily on Fox Sports 1, Eric Winalda gave Mike Petke the kudos. He said good. And this is not me picking sides here, because I'm happy that both Thierry Henry and Mike Petke, they had it out with each other. They exploded against each other. They went and talked about it with each other. They sat down like men, and they settled it. They settled their differences. They understand what to do. They understand each other better. And I believe this will make the club stronger. If things have changed, if things are different, then we'll have to wait and see what the situation will become. But I think both men agreed that it's over. Agreed, it's over and done with, and I think we can move on. But I will say this about Thierry Henry, and here's the situation. Thierry Henry knew what was going on when Mike Petke got the job. Thierry Henry knew the situation, what was going to happen when Mike Petke was given the reins as the head coach of this club. They tried to bring in Gary McAllister. Didn't work. They tried to bring in Paulo Sousa, the former Portuguese international. It didn't work. The Red Bulls painted themselves into a corner before the season got started. They had no head coach. He was given the interim tag. And before everything was said and done, Andy Roxburgh said, "Mike, would you like the job?" And Mike said yes. Is it Roxburgh's fault? I don't know. Because Roxburgh was being interfered with, not from Jerome Desboutins, not the general manager of the New York Red Bulls. He was being interfered with by Gerard Houllier. Soccer for the New York Red Bulls. Gerard Houllier deserves the blame for this fiasco. I understand he has to have the final word, but the truth is simple. He interfered with Roxburgh's decision-making. He also interfered with Desboutins' decision-making. Both men running Major League Soccer. They are closer to it than what Houllier was knowing about it. And because of Houllier, the search for a true head coach was delayed and delayed. I have to say it. A true head coach. Mike Petke right now is a rookie head coach. He's not a true head coach yet. I do see some flaws. And I'm not going to lie. I do see some flaws. But how is it possible when Mike Petke, who has been, how is he going to learn from this? How is he going to learn from all of this? Because already people are calling for his head. And the point is this. You know, it's easy to shout bloody murder when you feel it's not the right time for him to be a head coach. But the truth of the matter is this. How is he going to get the time? How is he going to try and become this head coach if you're going to already yell for him to be gone? That's what I'm talking about. That's the situation I'm talking about. You know, if there was this, if Arsene Wenger gets sacked by Arsenal and he comes here, pick him up. Frank Yallop is still out there. Maybe we pick him up at the end of the season if people think Pecky's not going to do the job. You know, Jason Christ got an opportunity for Real Salt Lake, and look what he's done. He's won an MLS Cup. He's gotten to the final of a CONCACAF Champions League, and now he's going to a final this season in the Open Cup in 2013. Ben Olsen's getting an opportunity, yet I don't hear the fans calling out for Ben Olsen's head. I don't hear that at all in D.C. So what are we going to do with Petke? Oh, well, you know, I don't care if he's a legend or not. I don't care. Fire him anyway. What have we seen? Well, let's be honest here. How many wins does Petke have? I mean, are we at the bottom of the table? Are we somewhere, you know, with DC and, you know, like them losing to Chivas USA, but losing to DC was a lot worse. Because why? Because they are bottom of the league and also bottom of the East. 12 wins. 6 draws, 9 losses, 42 points. Montreal in first because they have 2 games in hand. But the Red Bulls, with 42 points, ahead of Sporting Kansas City, behind Montreal for top of the East, you tell me, he needs to be sacked? No. He needs a full season, and we'll see what happens after they qualify for the playoffs. They still have plenty of games to go. 7 games left, and we'll see what happens. But here is that man right now in Mike Petke, and how he handled coaching against DC United for the third time this season.
Coach Mike Petke, Mike, your overall thoughts on tonight's match, please.
It was a gritty, gutsy performance for sure. I mean, some quality mixed in there for a lot of the game. Yeah, especially when we went down a man, it was difficult on these guys. But gutsy performance. They really put everything they had out there.
Take questions. Franco.
Tim had her top, obviously, and
well, I know I'd make you happy, Franco, to start Lloyd tonight. I thought Lloyd did phenomenal. I thought we actually didn't get him enough of the ball in the first half, but when he got it, beat his man, provided quality crosses. And Tim, we thought it was a good game to have Tim closer to the goal instead of making 30, 40-yard runs into the box as a late runner and tire himself out. But it was a great cross by Lloyd and a great finish by Tim, for sure.
Stefan. Coach, why the reason not to start
Tondreen?
Did it have anything to do with the dust-up you guys had last week?
Listen, I said it already 2 days ago. He's an emotionally fiery person, which I love about him, and I'm an emotional fiery person. This happens all over the world, everywhere. It's just news here because it's the Red Bulls and it's Thierry Henry. It's really much ado about nothing. We immediately cleared the air. And he's on board 100%. He was a huge spark coming off the bench and providing us with an immediate dangerous play there. So he did great tonight as well, along with the whole team.
So that wasn't the reason. Why didn't you start him?
I'm a coach and I make decisions every day, and I made my decision, and that's between me and the team. You don't like that answer?
I'm trying to read between the lines. Yeah. Should I?
Where are the lines? Are they this far apart, or are they this close?
I'll figure it out. Mm-hmm.
Hey, at least you have good night thinking enough, though. Be good.
Christian.
Can you talk about the impact of Bradley Wright Phillips in his first match and probably getting 76 minutes, yeah, maybe a little bit more than you would have wanted, but it seemed like he did a lot of good, hard running there, and he set up that first goal.
Mm-hmm. No, Bradley did very well tonight, along with everybody. His timing on his runs were very good. His ball control was back to the goal, playing one or two touch, laying it off and spinning. His understanding with Tim up there, and when Thierry came in for the short time he was on, it was good. And yes, I'm going to check out, and hopefully we didn't play him too long, as well as David Carney. Wasn't a plan to play. They did well. They're feeling good. Everybody's happy in there.
Dan's unlucky.
Coach, some more thoughts on David Carney and also Robles' big save on the penalty kick.
Yeah, Robles came up huge for us. I was obviously very upset about that penalty, extremely. Luis, that's why Luis watches film all week about the penalty takers for the opposing team, and it paid off for us today. As far as David Carney goes, I was very happy with him. He puts himself in good positions offensively. I think he saw a little bit of rust defensively here and there tonight, but that was very much expected. But overall, I thought he did a solid job, and we were happy with his performance.
I think a few more lucky than Dan.
Mike, Robles' saves, just in the long scheme of things, do you think about how important that save is, because you guys go into joint top in the first place, and do you point at that as a pivotal moment in the season right now?
Pivotal moment in the game, for sure, if not the pivotal moment. We've had many pivotal moments. There's probably be another one next week, good or bad. Every week you have a pivotal moment and a big play that defines the season up to that point. But for this game, that was incredible because it gave us a bit of a boost, confidence. With down a man, they tie it up right there, then it's going to be a real dogfight. So very, very big game changer.
Dan and Brian.
Mike, you're no stranger to this rivalry as a player and now as a coach, obviously, and you know that DC is not doing well this year. They're bottom of the league and bottom of the East. What did you say to Ben Olsen towards the end of the match down in your technical area? Because it looks like both of you are ready to shout very loudly.
Listen, Ben's a very close dear friend of mine, but for 90 minutes we don't like each other. and I respect that about him, and I'm sure he respects it about me. I had a bit of an issue with D-Ro getting hit in the face, an accidental hit. There's no pressure on our defender with the ball. D-Ro's holding his face, and we kick it out of bounds. And then Ben screaming for them to keep the ball, possession of the ball. I would have no problem with that if Olave had pressure on him and used that as an excuse, but with no pressure on, hitting the head, you know, he wanted to knock it out, and then they kept possession of the ball. If I'm down 2-1 late in the game, I'd like to think I wouldn't do that, but I'm not mad at him for doing it after the fact, you know. In the moment, I was ready. And I enjoyed yelling at Ben, and I'm sure he enjoyed that yelling at me, to be honest with you.
Take two more, Brian, than Franco.
That's actually what I was going to ask you, but I will switch up. What, not to beat a dead horse, but what was the genesis of whatever happened at practice between you and TC? What did you guys have to do to work it out?
All right, I'll repeat it for the fifth time. He's a fiery personality. I'm a fiery personality. We get together. Sometimes it's like a tornado meeting a volcano. So as far as what exactly it was about, that's an accumulated thing. That's why we have practice sessions that, you know, are usually on the field when only the team is there, because it has to do with the team. It's nothing serious at all, but it's being made a big deal about, which I understand. We immediately were in my office for 2 hours and a civil conversation. I heard him out, of course. He heard me out, and we moved on immediately. It didn't affect the team whatsoever. It didn't affect Thierry. It didn't affect me. He's on board, and that's exactly what happened.
Awesome.
What did you see of Romain Vander centrally, obviously his first start as a central midfielder, and also Tim Cahill, obviously he played, like you said, more advanced positions. That's something I could see more of going
forward. Of course, yeah. I mean, obviously with Lloyd having that performance he had tonight, you know, what I failed all year, I need players to make difficult decisions, and Lloyd certainly did that. Eric, we know we can rely on him there, and Tim's a warrior, you know, he'll play wherever we ask him to, and I think all those three changes right there, we liked what we saw tonight, so it gives us many options.
Thank you very much. Rebels Live will be back shortly.
And that's Mike Pecky, once again apologizing for the audio side of things. I guess we haven't gotten those things fixed yet, but hopefully we'll stop. Hopefully there won't be too much interference as we continue on playing some of this audio on the Red Bulls. And of course, Tim Cahill was injured. The best thing about Tim Cahill in the game, of course, not just him getting the assist on the Lloyd Pham goal and scoring the match winner against DC United, his son Kaya sang the national anthem, and he couldn't. Just amazing when a father is so proud of their son singing a song, especially even though they're from Australia, singing the American national anthem and practicing with him in their house right now. It's just awesome to see. Good for them, and hopefully a proud moment in the lives of Tim Cahill and the Cahill family. And let me just say, hopefully for Kaya, he'll make it big on Broadway or any show or whatever comes his way, wherever he gets. Good luck to him. But here's Tim Cahill right now on the match and his son.
So what are you more impressed by, your goal or your son singing the anthem?
Honestly, I didn't sleep last night at all. I said to the lads, I said, like, you know, for me it's emotional. My family means everything, but he was so relaxed, and we've been practicing it together, and he's been, you know, this is what he wants to do. He's an inspiring artist, and he's been doing really well, and to have this opportunity with the Australian fans here was really special. But also, you know how passionate the American people are with the anthem every game, and I know every word now because of my son, and it's, you know, for me it was one of the most special days of my life, and to deal with the passionate person I am, to deal with the fans, just to show them how much, you know, you care for the club. I think that I, you know, poured it all out, their emotions. But I said to the lads straight after when we went in the huddle, I said, look, if that doesn't give you inspiration to do well for the fans, for yourselves, to find that next gear, I don't know what will. And you could see today, we needed energy, we needed a reaction from the last three games, and we needed to show that we can play with no fear. And I suppose today that's what happened.
And that would help you choose the early start between the goal?
No, I think for us, is we set that whole week of playing like that. We said about the work rate. It was up to me and Bradley Wright to, you know, set the tempo and put an onus on their defence and make them uncomfortable. If they kick the ball long, then we've done our job. After that, the two sets of four. You know, I thought Eric and Dax were exceptional. The wingers were unbelievable today. You know, Lloyd gave us a different dimension, which was just exceptional. And then Johnny at the same time, and put that with the defenders. You know, Carney come through. He hasn't played in a while, but I knew his quality. I knew what he could do as a footballer, safe, can get forward, you know, can cross the ball. And in the end, a complete performance by the team with a goalkeeper. And that's what we're all about. You know, we're a team that should leave everything on the pitch, and we've got a few coaching kids now, but you know, I'm proud of the boys and the team, and obviously the fans you know, got a good reaction for what they deserve.
A bit of a tactical adjustment for you, obviously playing a little more advanced than you have all season. How'd you feel up there?
Nah, after I got the knock, I was struggling, honestly. But for me, I'll play anywhere. And when the coach asked me, he says, I'm going to play up front, I said, no problems. You know, all you do is you adjust to the circumstances of the players around you, and you get them to work to what me and Bradley's strengths are, and that's get us the ball. You know, we'll have a fight with them, we'll close them down, at the same time, we'll score goals, and we'll create chances for the other lads. So, you know, we're unlucky not to get on the end of a few more, but I suppose overall, you know, for me, the win is what we needed, and the 3 points, doesn't matter how you get them. I know everyone wants to play good football, but I thought we played some good football as well. We mixed it up.
Can you talk about your emotions, say, from the national anthem, captain's armband, the goal, and then the injury?
And I said from the start, like even at Everton, I've never needed the captain's armband to captain this team. The boys know that, so I'm a true leader. And, you know, I fight to the end. But there's two different elements to emotions. You know, taking emotions into the game and going too over the top, trying too hard, and because my son was sitting. It was sort of like trying to find a happy medium for the game. I just want to cross them. And you could have seen that tonight. And what I said to the lads, a little bit of quality, we'll get our goals. Be patient. And we're creating chances all over the park. But, yeah, emotions is fantastic. But, you know, I've been in the game a long time. Sometimes you can go the other way. You can try too hard and get sent off. And, you know, basically, I can't have him stealing all the limelight, can I? So, no, it was one of the proudest moments as a father. But I think for the fans, they can see what it feels for me as a player, trying to earn the respect from them and for my own teammates. This is what we need to do every week. And away from home, I know we can do it, but it's obviously up to us to continue this consistency.
Tim, obviously, Tim, with you've been being with Everton and all those battles with Liverpool, and sometimes, you know, Everton could be in the top 10 or Liverpool's in the bottom 10. DC United, of course, is in the bottom of the league, but do you throw that away because it's still a rivalry here?
No, you can't throw it away. You have to respect everyone. And I said last week that Chivas would be our trickiest game of the season, and it was. But it's definitely a rivalry game. You can see how much it means to the fans and how much it means to their players. But no, we played well, and we want it to be a big rivalry. And you see the coaches at the end, and I stepped in and had a laugh with Ben. The passion's there, and that's the good thing about America, is they're two young American coaches that want to win. So regardless whether you stand in this table, everyone's taking points off everyone.
So what do you have to say to Ben? It looked like Ben was going after Mike, and then he was laughing.
Yeah, Ben, I just put him in a headlock if he said, come on, you know the way it is. He's a good guy. He's a good young, passionate manager that wants the most of his team. And he felt that he didn't have to give the ball back, but he felt that he did. But, you know, overall, you know, like I said to Mike, we've got the 3 points, so that's all that matters. So shake his hand.
Be right
laugh,
there for.
Oh, you wish them all the best, because it's a good club and they're doing some good things. And he's a good young manager, so just have a laugh with him, you know.
I know you touched on it. Bradley Wright, obviously, it's his first start, but what do you think
his
performance overall? He obviously helped
him
get up the first goal, even though he got
kicked,
and he also tackled the guy, and that's
defended him as well. No, but Bradley is what it is. You know, playing with him is fantastic. He's a good pro that's been around the block, and he understands football. And I think that's the biggest thing in a team like this. The way we set up is like we're playing back in England. You know, basically, we run after everything, upsetting defenders. And when you play like that, you're not going to be the one on the end of it most of the time. It's normally the players coming through. So we talked about, you know, doing unselfish work for the team, and that's what Bradley is. He's a team player, and for us, it was a massive moment for him playing tonight, and showing the fans that he's definitely a fantastic asset to the squad.
And Lloyd, obviously, I know you touched on him as well, but he tried his standards across this from the right side.
Yeah, Sam was amazing. You know, all of them, you know. But, I said to him tonight, ask him, I said, you're going to be on fire tonight. He said, you know, this is your night, you're going to shine. And he did. He didn't let anyone down. And when you give him his chance, he produces, and he produced again tonight, so on fire for him.
Thank you.
Tim, how important was that penalty save from Robles, and how much does it mean for the team going forward?
Oh, it's massive. It should have been a penalty.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Robles is a fantastic keeper, and that's what he's all about. He pulls off the big saves. He did in the first half, and yeah, he's one of the main cogs in this football team. So, you know, we talk about him every week, but just collectively as a team, the boys are outstanding. So, you know, I'm so happy for them, and it's a good weekend for New York Rebels.
And that is the end of that, finally. I apologize for, it's not the audio from the audio clip. I play these audios, clips for you, and hopefully everyone can hear what's going on. I'm going to try one more with Luis Robles. Great save. Fantastic save, and hopefully everyone can hear the whole thing. But he did a great job, and we're going to play that right now.
Luis, a game-winning penalty save. Talk about it, and then talk about the result, getting the 2-1 win over DC.
Well, I think this week we knew that we had to give an answer for last week. We went to LA, and we just didn't give our best, and we ended up dropping 3 points that were vital in this race because everything's really tight in this conference. So this week was really important for us to give an answer, and I felt like we did a good job there. That penalty kick situation, I guess I'm a little upset about because we didn't communicate properly. Unfortunately, we had to endure that, and now we're missing it out.
Luis, when you make a save like this, do you sense the crowd getting into the game like they did?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, I knew that this was huge for us. We needed 3 points. So to block that and to hear the crowd was full, but at the end of the day, we still had about 20-25 minutes left to go.
How much film do you watch on PK takers? And Mike mentioned it, that you do a lot of work in there.
Yeah, no, with David Lee, their video guy, he's really good at having all the PK takers. And then before the game, I sit with Ryan and Rafa and just decide what their strategy is and what our strategy is before it. So it's definitely a group effort.
What were you looking for when D-Ro was stepping up to take the case?
I felt like he was trying to trip me out. I know he did a couple things that I think very clever forwards do to try to trip the goalie, so I felt pretty confident with where I was going, and I just luckily went the right way.
Did he surprise you with where he went with the shot, or no?
There were a few things that he did beforehand that I was pretty confident, because I know that he was definitely trying to trip me off, and at the end of the day, you know, it's a crapshoot, so I'm just really glad it worked out. We got 3 points.
You could tell he was telling where he was going to go with the ball?
There's some things that I look for, and I'll just leave it at that. Thanks.
And that is Luis Robles. We're not going to play the rest of any audios right now. I just think we have a bit of an issue here, and it's a shame. I really wanted to play everything for you guys. I wanted to play Bradley Wright Phillips audio. Hopefully, the next time we have a show, we can play these audios for you that I owe you, because it's really not right. I apologize for this technical issue that we're having here, and that we're not going to be able to play the rest of the audios for you. But I just wanted to say once again that it's a situation where it's just been really, really interesting because of the way everything ended up. Now, people are wondering, did you get Thierry Henry? Thierry Henry declined to comment in his own way. He said he didn't play, and he did not talk to the media. You know, he did sub in. I guess he feels that you got to be a starter from start to finish to be considered a player. But just got to say, it's just one of those things where that it's just one of those things that and all I can say is that I don't know. But Thierry Henry, he doesn't, you know, second straight game, he's not talking to the media in a certain way, and that's just fine. That's how he feels, we'll see what happens. You know, I try not to look for revenge. I try not to look for trying to get him or say, I try not to intentionally look to write something negative about Thierry Henry because I feel that's not my place. And you know what? Maybe I should say something. But the thing is that, you know, Thierry Henry has done a lot. Thierry Henry has done a lot in this game, and if I feel like I'm going to say something very, very negative, I will. You know, there are certain writers, it doesn't matter what sport it is, but the truth of the matter is there are some writers that will have an opportunity to go negative on a player. Maybe I should be a little bit more, I don't know, ruthless. Maybe I should be a little bit more angry. He doesn't talk, you know. I don't know if that's even my place. We'll have to wait and see. Maybe one day I will say something. But the truth of the matter is this. Thierry Henry, you know, he's done a lot in this game. And, you know, let's be honest, he still gets a lot of respect from people that have been either supporters of Arsenal, Barcelona, French national team, or just fans of Thierry Henry. And to be honest with you, I'm to have the opportunity to see him perform in front of me and to see him do these great things. And all I can say is that there's an opportunity. Or La Liga or the Bundesliga or Serie A, you know, you wish to see that player come here, but at a younger age. And even though we've gotten some pretty damn good highlights from Thierry Henry, whether it be a regular goal, a spectacular goal, or a goal you just, you know, it doesn't even matter, you know, what part of the game it is. He just does an unbelievable thing. He does an unbelievable thing, and it's just absolutely incredible how Thierry Henry can score goals and how he sets them up too. So, like a Lloyd Sam, like a Bradley Wright Phillips, they're getting an opportunity, and they're doing well. They're doing very well. They're getting an absolute. You see some players that wore your shirt, that wore the shirt of the club, and you're thinking to yourself, I wish we still had this guy. And believe me, I think some of these moves that have been made have been very, very, you know, numbskull-like. But the truth of the matter is this. The matter is this, is that unfortunately when you get people that are not paying attention to the salary cap situation and they're forced to make this move, because of the salary cap situation that is so extreme by MLS. And the hope is, and this is the hope is that we can get this thing moved up into a competitive level and maybe we can get rid of the single entity. And it's just one of those things, my friends. We're just going to move forward and not worry so much about what goes on. It doesn't matter what sport it is. They have an agenda, and they want to sound controversial. But there are those that do care, want to report on what goes on in a player's head about what is going on with this particular club, and they do want to know. But I know I backtracked. I got sidetracked a little bit. But the point is, it's simple. Robles has done a fantastic job as a keeper this season. Sam, hopefully he'll get his opportunity, and he'll continue to play hard, and hopefully he'll be able to continue to play and start on the right side of the midfield. Bradley Wright Phillips, I thought he did a good job. I think that once he gets more minutes, I think he'll be a solid player for this club. And once again, it's just one of those things where you hope that things get fixed up here. They get back on a big run, and then they go on a big playoff run, because I think that's the one thing this club that has been massive in good seasons. Unfortunately, it's just one of those things where you just have to say that something's going to have to break for them and get them back to that MLS Cup title game, and we'll see what happens. But one thing is for sure, is that I think Mike Pecky right now, I think he's a little too loyal to some players, but at least with the situation that happened with Thierry Henry, you can tell that he wanted to get this situation. It happened. It's been building up. It's finally come through. Cooler heads have prevailed. And I truly believe that the situation has been fixed. It's over with. It's gone. We're going to move forward. And that is what I am hoping for personally. This is what I'm hoping for personally. That this situation is over with and it's gone, and we can all relax and we can concentrate on the season. Granted, we'll be at least a month, but hopefully he can heal up quickly like he did with the PCL tear. And hopefully he can go on and come back early. We'll see what happens. I'm not saying he's going to come back early, Tim Cahill, but I'm hoping that we can get this situation fixed and we can hopefully get this situation resolved. So we'll see what happens as we move forward. Let's take a look at the Red Bull schedule, because coming. And these are the games that we have to take a look at and see what's going to happen. Once again, Sunday, September the 8th, 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern, the Red Bulls will be down at BBVA Compass Stadium against the Dynamo down in Houston. Saturday, September the 14th, they'll be home at 7 o'clock Eastern against Toronto FC. They'll be on, and both games are on MSG. Home, once again, on Sunday, September the 22nd at 5 o'clock Eastern, Red Bulls will be hosting FC Dallas. And that game will also be on MSG and UniMas as well. And that's September. We keep on going here in September. They'll be on the road on Sunday night, the 29th of September at 9 o'clock Eastern in Seattle. And that will be their final West Coast game, or West Coast opponent, their final road trip to the New England Revolution. And that'll be at 7 o'clock Eastern on Saturday night, October the 5th. They'll have a week break for World Cup qualifying for your national calendar. October the 20th, the Red Bulls will be in Houston again at 4 o'clock Eastern on October the 20th. And then on Sunday, October 27th, they'll be home against the Chicago Fire at the 5 o'clock p.m. start time. So it should be pretty good to see what's going on here. It should be exciting. It should be a lot of fun. I know I cannot wait to finish off this Red Bull schedule and qualify for the MLS Cup playoffs. Who they will face, we are not sure. But obviously, it's going to be, you know, I cannot wait for this. It's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. Don't forget, everyone, this Friday night, I will be having my pre- and post-game shows for World Cup qualifying 2014. The U.S. will be down in Costa Rica. You can watch it on beIN Sport. I will be at the Hooters of Wayne, New Jersey on Route 23, my pre- and post-game show. It will be the end of Rosh Hashanah, so I will not be able to travel to the Football Factory. Oops, excuse me about that. I will not be able to travel to New York City to do the pre- and post-game show from the Football Factory. It's a bit too far for me, unfortunately. I wish I could. If I did live closer, it would be a little bit better, but I don't at the moment. So I'll be doing it from the Hooters of Wayne on Route 23 in Wayne, New Jersey. When they go on their final road trip, then probably I'll be doing that match on the road. And hopefully it will come on my my cable box here with Optimum Cablevision. So get ready for that. And then, of course, Sunday, September the 8th, the Red Bulls will be taking on the Houston Dynamo down in Houston, Texas, at BBVA Compass Stadium. And on that Monday, which would be the 9th, I'll be doing a special Red Bulls review. I'll probably extend it because, unfortunately, with the player, with, you know, we're having these technical issues with the audio. So what I'll probably do is I'll extend the show into what was going to be just for 30 minutes. I'll extend it to 45 minutes because I wanted to make it quick because, you know, you hope not to have, excuse me, you hope not to do a show or as fast as possible, and you're just going to make it really quick, and that would be the end of it. So you try and do these things as quickly as possible and not worry so much about, you know, interference with the match games, with league matches. So, and don't forget on Tuesday, September the 10th, pre- and post-game shows, World Cup qualifying, USA versus Mexico in Columbus. We'll have on Robert Hay Jr. from the U.S. of Football podcast, along with Eric Gomez from Gold.com, covers the Mexican national team as well as the Mexican Primera Division. Unfortunately, John Jagu will not be available for pre- and post-game because he'll be working some Texas Rangers baseball for Fox Sports Southwest. But, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my guests. I want to thank Ignacio Rodriguez. I want to thank John Jagu. I also want to thank Christian Dyer. I apologize for any audio cutouts, cutoffs, disappearances. I apologize about that, and hopefully this technical issue will be solved for this coming Friday. But once again, my name's Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. Thank you very much. I'll be back on the air once again this Friday for Costa Rican USA World Cup qualifying pre- and post-game show, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Pacific for pregame, midnight Eastern, 9 o'clock Pacific for postgame. Thank you. As always, please enjoy your football. Thank you very much. Have a good night, and I hope everyone fine. Thank you. Take care, everybody. Have a good night.